Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast.
The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. My guest today is Jordan Giberson. Before we get to Jordan, I have a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there. And there you'll find some stories that I've written, some stories that some of the guests have written. You'll find links to our social media, which is, of course, Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. That's the big one. Let's get those numbers up, folks. Go there, follow us, pass it around, share it, take one down, pass it around, drink it, own it, subscribe to it. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. Just subscribe, follow, do what you got to do. Interact, write me. Speaking of writing to me, traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's where you can write me and ask me any travel questions. Maybe you can suggest somebody for the show as a guest, or maybe nominate yourself as a guest on the show. But that's where you reach me, traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Most of you listen to us via a streaming device of some sort, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Please subscribe to us on those platforms. And also, as a favor, why not give us a good rating? Costs you nothing, but it helps more people find the show, and that's a cool thing for you to do. Jordan Giberson wrote me last year, and we've been playing email tag ever since. But finally, we made this interview happen. Jordan is a young lady from Austin, Texas, and she's been living in the UK since about 2019. From her very first trip to London, she knew that she wanted to live there. And after she graduated from school, she made it happen. And she still makes her home in London. She made it through COVID and everything else. And she started her own podcast about helping people who also want to move abroad. And it's called the Move Abroad Podcast. So check that out. If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that I've talked to a number of people, not only expats, but also people who own companies that help people move abroad. So this is a hot topic now. So if you're ever thinking about moving abroad, certainly as Americans who are thinking about living abroad, check out her podcast, follow along on her socials. If you want to learn everything about her, you can go to jordangiberson.com, and we'll have links on our webpage to all her sites. So Jordan lives in London. She was on the road in Edinburgh when we recorded this. I had to wake up nice and early. But we made it happen. But it was great to meet her, and hopefully next time when I'm in London, she and I can meet for lunch at that one Tex-Mex place she talks about. Here's my chat with Jordan Giberson. You're in Edinburgh right now. Is this
yes.
For work or pleasure?
It's a working holiday.
Okay, now the Fringe Festival hasn't started yet, has it?
I sure hope not, because that means it'd be very hectic here. But no, I just came, a couple of my friends from Texas. We do a trip every year.
Oh.
So okay. I'm still going to be working. So I'm at a WeWork right now, actually. I'll be working here, but then just joining in whenever I can.
Oh, okay. Right on. So temperature-wise, what are we talking in Edinburgh in July? Because it could be anything.
Yeah, it's 67 right now.
Okay. And you said it in Fahrenheit. So that, thank you for
yes.
that, for us dumb Americans.
I still work in Fahrenheit. I don't work in Celsius. I probably should, but yeah, I still work in Fahrenheit.
Okay. Well, how long have you been there? In the UK?
Yeah, I've been in the UK coming up to 6 years. It'll be 6 years in September.
Okay. And what brought you there was work or just wanting to get the hell out?
No, honestly, I went on a study abroad whenever I was at school in college, and I was in London for just 4 days, and I fell in love with it, and I said, I'm going to move here someday, and then I didn't think that I'd ever actually do it, and then I just became obsessed, really.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what did you study and how did you make it so you could stay there? I mean, you needed a work visa. You know, it's not like an easy thing to get. So what's your great skill that they allowed you to stay?
Yeah. So it's kind of a long story and it's changed now after Brexit. But I ended up, so I basically was in a university a couple years before I finished school, fell in love with London, said, I'm going to move there. But as you know, it's very difficult to get a visa. So I was getting near to graduating. I just really wanted to move to the UK. I had many people discourage me from doing it, saying I needed to have more years of work experience before I could get a visa, that it's too difficult, that I shouldn't really try. A lot of people really discouraged me. And I do think that this is a good route for people that have recently graduated. So I had graduated and there was a visa that was, it's called Tier 5. They still have the visa. And it's basically where you do an internship. So I did a 3-month long internship, for which I basically sponsored myself. So I paid for my own visa and did the internship. And then I did that internship in Brighton. So I really wanted to be in London, but I was like, okay, Brighton is about an hour south of London on the coast, 3-month long internship. And get this, the company that I interned with, they explosion-proofed forklift trucks.
Explosion?
Right?
Okay, sure.
Yeah, so random.
Was that your field
of
study?
Very industrial. I studied marketing. Yeah.
Okay.
So I got my degree in marketing. I was working in the marketing department there, but it was very industrial. It's exactly how you'd imagine it. It was not what I had wanted to go into, but it was an opportunity, a foot in the door, and I said, I'm just going to take it. So while all my friends were having amazing salaries with great jobs in the U.S., I was taking an internship that was technically unpaid and working for a company that was explosion-proofing forklift trucks. So I was like, you know what? It's an opportunity. I'm going to move
to
the
UK. Living
the dream. It's just a foot in the door. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily living the dream at first, but now I have my dream job. So, you know, I had to kind of work my way up, but I think it was just, you have to have a foot in the door. So that's what I did, was I had a Tier 5 visa right after graduation. It was an internship for 3 months. And then I worked my way into London and having a full-time role.
Well, Brighton is not the worst place, you know, you could have ended up. I mean, there it is by the sea. It's got, it's pretty lively, bar and restaurant scene. It's like the most, I guess open-minded place in London you could have gone. I don't know where you came from in Texas. It might have been a shock.
Yeah, I'm from Austin, Texas.
Oh, so not that crazy.
Yeah, but Brighton was a really great place. I really enjoyed it. But I was also working probably 30 minutes west of Brighton as well because it was quite industrial, the company I was at. So it was a bit outside of the city too. But Brighton was great. I really enjoyed it. But they also told me this is the rainiest year that they had in so many years. And I showed up in late September in 2019 and it was very rainy and dark. And, but I was, you know, I was so happy to be there. I didn't even care. I was just so happy to be in the UK. So yeah, I loved it.
Okay,
rain
so
and all.
Yeah. So you're there and then now you're there for what, like 6 months and then COVID hits. And what happened there? How hard did it lock down? And did you even have a job at that point? Did they keep you home?
Yeah. So, you know what? I worked for that company in Brighton and then I finished that in December of 2019. So then I started a second internship. Two internships after graduating, getting my master's degree. I got two internships, but I was like, you know what? I'm here. I'm going to make it happen. So I got another internship in London starting in late January of 2020. And I was working there for 6 weeks before we were taking our monitors home on the tube, which was wild. But I was just so happy to have an opportunity, so happy to be in London finally. I just didn't even care. I mean, we were locked down. We were stuck in our flats. But I was just happily working along and trying to prove myself at this company so that I could get a full-time role. So, and that's what I did. I just enjoyed walking in my cute Victorian townhouse neighborhood and just enjoyed what I could. And honestly, I think, again, I was just so happy to be there. So,
which neighborhood was it? Where did you end up?
So I ended up in Shepherd's Bush in West London.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, I lived there for 5 years. I actually just recently moved out. I moved to Putney in Southwest London, which I love.
Oh, wow.
I'm right on the river. Yeah.
That's nice. I had friends in Chiswick that wasn't too far from there.
Chiswick is my most favorite neighborhood in London. I was supposed to move to Chiswick, and I put down a security deposit for a flat there. I was supposed to move there. And then last minute, I decided that Putney was a bit better because the flat was bigger and a bit better of a deal. But if I buy a home in London, it will be in Chiswick. I'm obsessed.
So you got these two internships. So yes, two different correct. Ones. They're both unpaid?
Two internships. No, the second one was paid. My salary was very low. I feel like the only way that I was able to make it financially was because it was COVID. So we weren't going on the tube. We weren't going out. I wasn't going to get drinks with coworkers. So I feel like that was really the only way I was able to make it financially, because it is quite tough in the UK. They don't pay that well for internships. So yeah, but I was able to make it. And again, like, I didn't even care. I was willing to do whatever it took to be able to be there.
Yeah. So in a way, it was kind of a blessing. Getting locked in.
It was a bit of a blessing. It was a bit of a blessing. Yeah. So that was quite wild. And then I basically, that visa, you can only have it for 1 year. So I had that visa from September 2019, the tier 5 visa. So I had it with one company for 3 months. And then with the second company that I entered with, I could have it for 9 months. So then on September 5th, my internship ended. And I said, okay, the company that I was working for, I said, I really want to continue working for you. Can you please sponsor my visa? And I was trying to prove myself right during this internship. And they said, we really want to sponsor you. But at the time, Brexit was not going through until January of 2021. So I had about 4 months from September of 2020 to January 2021, whenever the Brexit finally went through. And I said, okay, can I work for you as a contractor? And I'll keep my job. I'll keep doing the work that I'm doing, because I was really afraid that they were going to replace me. So I said, can I work for you as a contractor? And I'll be in the similar time zone. I'm going to go into Italy and I'm going to work remotely from there, because we're all working remotely anyways. Can I do that? And they said, yes. So I worked as a contractor in Italy. Yeah. And it was crazy. It was at the time, Americans weren't, I don't know if you remember this, but at the time, Americans were not allowed in Europe. They were banned from Europe during COVID. Yeah. And so I'm American, had an American passport going into Italy, and my visa was about to end. But at the time, Brexit hadn't gone through. And so the UK was still a part of the EU. And so I got into Italy on the grounds that I still technically had a visa in the UK, even though it was just about to expire, and had all this paperwork. I had a letter from my boss trying to explain my situation, that I had been working for them for a year, even though I had the American passport. And I got to the Italian border. They didn't even look at my paperwork, the letter that I had put together. They just stamped my passport and they're like, go on, which is so crazy.
Wow.
So some countries, like Italy, is just so relaxed.
You beat that by about a week, probably.
I know.
So I didn't know it took that long for Brexit to kick in, because I was visiting. I was in Amsterdam when the morning after the vote.
Yeah.
When for the last year,
all
my friends in London were telling me, "Oh, it's never going to happen. It's insane. It's not going to happen." And then we all know what happened. So it was a big shock, not just there, but everywhere in Europe.
Absolutely.
But I didn't know that it took like 5 years for it to kick in.
Yeah, it all officially went through in January of 2021.
Yeah, it's about 5 years.
That's whenever the visa process changed. And the reason why they wanted to wait was, I don't know if you remember this, but before Brexit had gone through, for Americans to be able to get a visa, which is it's called a skilled worker visa now, but at the time it was called tier 2 visa, and it's just the general working visa. And before Brexit had gone through, you used to have to do a residential skilled labor market test. I think that was, it was basically a labor test that proved that there weren't any, that you had some special skill to be able to fulfill the role that a local person couldn't fulfill, basically.
Yeah.
And after Brexit, that actually benefited Americans, because then we didn't have to do the test. It basically leveled the playing field between Europeans that wanted a job versus an American who wanted the same job in the UK. So it actually worked out better for me. And that's why the company wanted to wait until Brexit had gone through, because they didn't have to provide that test, basically, to the UK government.
Okay. Was all this experience of having to go through all this visa stuff, was this the inspiration for you to start your visa company? Like, we should say that we haven't said the name of your company yet. And tell me how your work of making forklifts that didn't explode, how did that lead to a visa company and an expat company?
Yeah, you know, I think it all kind of started whenever I wanted to move abroad, because it was a really emotional thing for me to move abroad. None of I had some people that supported me, but I feel like a lot of my family and friends discouraged me from moving abroad, and I didn't know anybody in my circles that had ever done it. And so it was quite an emotional decision for me. I had so many conversations with my family trying to convince them that it was a good idea, because it was difficult for me at the time to not have full support from my family on a big decision like that. So I think it took a lot of guts for me to do it. And I think it was just so confusing doing research online, doing visa research, figuring out how to do it. I had so many phone calls. I had reached out to so many people on LinkedIn, just trying to figure out what the process looked like for visas, how to get a job, how to get connected with people, if I need to be there in person, if I get interviewed from the US. And the more research I did, I feel like the more overwhelmed I felt. So I think one of the biggest reasons was I really wish that I had a person to kind of coach me along the process. And that was the biggest reason why I kind of started the Move Abroad podcast and trying to help other people be able to move abroad. So it was really because it was a struggle for me to be able to do it. And I had people coming to me asking me about it. And so I genuinely get so excited whenever someone says that they want to move abroad. And a lot of people say they want to, but then I think they have that just, they're nervous or scared or they don't know the process. And I think there are a lot of roadblocks. So if I can help someone be able to accomplish that dream of moving abroad, then that makes me pumped. So that was
right. Well, people say a lot of things and they never follow through.
I know. So, I mean, I said I was going to move abroad for 2 years and I didn't actually think I was going to do it. So I think you have to have that like, okay, I actually want to do it, you know?
Yeah. It's a shame your family wasn't totally on board. Wasn't there someone there to like cheer you along?
They just love me so much, you know? They didn't want me to leave. And I think there was a fear of losing the relationship. I think they were afraid that I wasn't ever going to come back or that I wasn't safe, because it's the fear of the unknown, right? They hadn't been there before and no one in our family or friend groups had ever done that. So I think it was just fear of the unknown, fear of losing the relationship. But over time, I think they saw I was happy, supporting myself. I still came back home, still have good relationships with them. And so now they're supportive.
And there's a thing called the internet. You could, you know, talk all the time, FaceTime
exactly.
and everything.
And we do. And I also tell them, I'm like, well, my sister lives in Denver. And I say, I honestly spend more time with my family than she probably does. Because, well, you know, it's like she maybe goes home a bit more often, but I go home for extended periods of time and probably almost just as often as she does. So even though I'm farther away and there's the time difference thing, like I actually spend more time with my family than she does. So it's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah. So you're still remotely. When did you go completely remote and when did you lose the day job forever?
You know, I still work basically fully remotely.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. So we
– Hey, if you can do it.
I love it. It really depends on the person. There's pros and cons definitely to working remotely or being in an office, because I lose out on relationships with coworkers. You don't have that kind of fun camaraderie, but I also appreciate the freedom. I mean, I'm in Edinburgh this week working remotely.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Cool,
I
right?
was actually going to say that. It's not so bad.
So that's pretty cool. No, not so bad, but I think I kind of have the best of both worlds because we do have an office in London. So I typically go in once a week. And although there are not people in the office that I work directly with, most of the people that I work with are also working remotely and mostly in the United States. I still have my buddies in the office and we chit chat and I sit next to them. And so I do have relationships with people, but I'm not obligated to go in, which is nice.
So does this company you still work for, I mean, are they still a visa or is that still a thing or do you have a different visa now?
They are still sponsoring my visa. So I'm actually in the process of renewing my visa currently. Actually, right before this, I was emailing them about information about my renewing my visa application. But I get to apply for, it's called ILR in the UK, indefinite leave to remain. I should be able to apply for that in April of this upcoming year. So after 5 years of being a continual resident in the UK and having a skilled worker visa, you can apply for permanent residency, which is the equivalent of the green card in the US. But I don't know if you've heard, but in the UK, they're changing some of the visa rules. So one of the rules that they might change is to – you're nodding your head like you have heard this.
Yeah,
I don't know if you have.
I've heard this a few times.
Yeah. So they're talking about increasing the amount of time from 5 years of being in the country to 10 years before you can get permanent residency, which is crazy. So I don't know when that will go through. I saw somewhere online – and again, this is all – no one really knows, but someone had said online that they are going to implement all these things during the current term, which will end in 2029, is what they say. So it might not go through for another couple years. And since this is such a huge change, I would anticipate that it will take a little bit more time for it to go all the way through and to be implemented. And they might, you know, grandfather in the people that currently have a skilled worker visa. But again, people don't really know.
Well, the rules seem to be, they seem to be changing everywhere. And I think that
exactly,
you know, especially since like we saw during COVID, and now the big thing is they're seeing Americans, a lot of people like you, and not just you. I mean, specifically the country we've talked about the most on here recently in the last few years is Portugal, because that has just boomed. But Portugal's been found out, and in the 5 years I've been talking about Portugal, they've changed the rules every year because it's just been too many.
More difficult.
And now that you can't buy property anymore as a foreigner, and that changed. It went from like, oh, you just got to buy a $250,000 house to like, then it went to $400,000. Then it went to $500,000. Then it went, you can't buy in these popular areas. And now it's like, you can't even buy that for the golden visa now. So you can invest in the company, in the country still. You can invest in other projects. But so, and it's not, of course, it's not just us, you know, you're dealing with Chinese, you know, you got like Eastern Europeans, the Germans were buying it up, you know, it's so, and I know the UK, Brexit is part of it. You know, isn't that kind of like, you know, the same people behind that are like, you know, we'd like to keep the numbers down, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean,
they're changing the rules. Maybe
they're excited
not so
about
much.
It. They want the labor, and then they're like, wait, there's too many of you.
We didn't know you'd be sending the Africans. We didn't know you'd be sending the Syrians and that kind of stuff. You know, so it's a hard line to cross, you know, and they change yearly, it seems. COVID also taught people that you can work remotely. So people are going like you. It's like, why would I, if I can work in Italy, or live in Italy and still do my work, why won't I? And speaking of Italy, how long did you stay there? And where in Italy were you?
Yeah, so I stayed there for 3 months. So you can only stay for 90 days as a U.S. citizen. So I stayed for almost the full 3 months.
89 and a half days you were there.
Yeah, I gave myself a bit of a buffer because I was like, just in case I have an emergency and I need to stop over for a few days, just in case. But I did stay for almost the full 90 days and I just bopped around. I was like, you know what? I have the freedom to do this. I'm just going to see what happens. So I landed in, I want to say Venice, but that's not right. Oh my God. Milan. I landed in Milan and then I went to Lake Como for a week. So I booked a week in Lake Como and worked remotely from there, which is incredible. And then
Bellagio.
I was in Bellagio.
Of course.
Yeah, and I had an Airbnb looking out to the water, which is incredible. So, and what was so great was at the time, because I was, first of all, booking, it was during COVID, so there weren't many people traveling. So there were a million Airbnbs that were opened. And because I was booking everything last minute, I would message my Airbnb host before booking. And I said, like, hey, would you give me a discount? So I did that with pretty much all my Airbnbs because supply and demand. So I ended up getting really good deals and staying at really incredible Airbnbs, which was really cool. But yeah, I just kind of bopped around. I'd stay at a place normally a week at a time. And then if I felt like I wanted to stay longer, then I would extend another week. And if I felt like going on to the next place, then I would just get on a train and go to the next place. So I did that for 3 months.
That's great. Was it summer?
So it was September. So perfect. I started September 5th and then I went for about 3 months. So it started getting colder and darker the longer that I went.
She just like,
but I also kept heading south.
Just keep moving south. Yeah, I was
so
going to say. Sicily by the end of it.
No, the furthest south that I went was Rome. And the reason why I stopped there, I stayed there for 3 weeks and then I went to Croatia after that for another month. But the reason why I stayed in Rome was, I don't know if you remember, but at the time there were different regions. It was like red region, yellow region, and green. So it was like green had the most freedom and then red was in lockdown. So I was just kind of chasing the green sections of the country. So that's why I ended up staying in Rome.
Okay. Yeah. I remember like the famous, and you know, you wonder how much of it was AI, but that drone shot of that somebody sent through like the deserted streets of Rome. It was really, it was incredible because it was utterly empty.
London was
the same. No one's ever seen it.
London was the same. People were taking their bikes into the city during lockdown and it looked wild. I never did that. I probably should have once in a lifetime, right?
Well, yeah, you should have. I mean, yeah. We'll never see it. Like, I had a friend who moved to Kauai during it just because, you know, he had to quarantine for about 2 weeks when he got there. But once he was there, it was like, we saw Kauai with no tourists. Nobody will ever get that, you know?
I mean, exactly. And that was what was so interesting. In Italy, it was like that. It was only Italians. Yeah. And I remember the Italians saying, this is really weird for us. We've never not had tourists because it's such a huge tourist hub in Italy.
Absolutely.
So it was actually really wild for me to be there at the time because it completely changed those places and made them, I mean, just so different and empty and almost kind of what you'd imagine it should be like. Because whenever you normally go to Rome, it's full of tourists, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. And there's a good reason why people want to be there because it's so incredible. But yeah, I made it really cool to experience it that way.
That's pretty well. So how were the lockdown rules in Italy different than the UK? Because here it was different state to state. It was different county to county here. It was insane. So, I mean, I did interview a friend of mine in Milan, and she lives in Milan and Bologna, in the early days, like March of 2020, March, April.
Wow. Yeah.
And she was, you know, locked down hard. Like she couldn't leave her building. What was it like in London compared to Rome and Milan, let's say?
Yeah, London was, it was bad. It was okay in the summer because we had such a great summer. So it started in kind of March. It started getting bad in the summer, but I didn't really care because I was just kind of diving into work, proving myself at this company, and just loving being in London. So I was so excited. And then I don't know if you remember, but it would kind of like peak in places where it would get really bad with COVID and they would lock it down and then it would go back down. It would dip really, really low and then people would go back out and then it would go up again. So I actually hit Italy in the best time because the UK started getting really bad and kind of hitting its peak of bad COVID and going into bad lockdown the second I left in September 5th of 2020. So then as it was going down in Italy, that's whenever I hit Italy. So I went there whenever it was really low COVID in Italy. And then the longer I was there over the 3 month period, it got worse. So I experienced lockdown in the UK way more than I did in Italy. I never really had lockdown because like I said, I was just kind of chasing the green areas in Italy. I would see like, where is going to be the most free for me to go? And then I would just book a train to go there. So
Did you get to Croatia? Was there any rules in Croatia? I was wondering.
You know what's wild? So this is a bit of a long story. So it kind of depends on if you want to dive into this. But whenever I was in Italy, I had told myself if I can get a COVID test, because at the time you had to get a COVID test to be able to travel into Croatia. And I said, if I can get a COVID test, I'm going to go to Croatia. If I can't get a COVID test, then I'm going to go back to Texas because Texas also didn't really have bad lockdown. And I needed to go back home for Christmas anyways. So I was like, if I can get one, then I'll go to Croatia. And I ended up getting one. And the story of how I got one was kind of wild. But I did end up getting a COVID test done. And I booked a flight for the next day. And I landed in Croatia because it was free at the time and Americans were allowed in. And it was such a party for like 2-3 days. And then I was there for like a couple of days and then they locked all of Croatia down, all the restaurants closed. But whenever I booked the flight, everything was very open and then it got locked down right whenever I arrived, which was pretty wild. But what was cool was that there were remote work was kind of increasing at the time. There were a lot of digital nomads that were in Croatia. It was kind of a hub for that. And Americans were allowed in. So it attracted all of these digital nomads into one place in Croatia and Split. So there were a ton of digital nomads there at the time. And we all kind of met each other. I remember we had one night out and we just met a ton of people and we all kind of formed a kind of a little group and we hung out for the whole. Yeah, we created a bit of a bubble and we had so much fun. So I think everything kind of shut down for the rest of the month, but we still had so much fun. So I made connections on the first couple of days and then we were all buddies for that month, which was honestly, we had a lot of fun.
That's great. Did you stay in Split or did you move around?
I stayed in Split for the most part, but I did travel out to different islands. So all the boats were still working because Split's a good hub and then there's a lot of different islands off of that. So we did
Hvar.
Go island hopping a little bit. Yeah. I didn't go to Hvar that trip, but we went to a couple islands, which was really cool. So, and they were also very deserted and
cool. Did you ever make it to Lojin?
No, I haven't. Am I missing out?
Yeah, it's great. It's all about wellness and all these spas there. And I had never heard of it, but I went there on a media trip and it was great. And it was almost like Baden-Baden or one of those kind of spa towns. It's like where the kings back in the day used to go for their health, you know, to get away
from. Oh, wow.
the pollution and whatever and stuff to heal themselves in the waters, you know, but everything, and then like the water so clear in the you know, everything. But it was great. I was all about natural things and products and spas and massages. And it's really, I recommend it to people. It's just a little hard to get to. You gotta take a little small puddle jumper flight from Zagreb or something, you know.
I feel like those are always the best places, the places that are a little bit hard to get to, because that means that there won't be as many tourists and it can kind of keep that beautiful bubble where it's still very authentic.
And Americans didn't know anything about it. That was one of the kind of nice things about it. I mean, if they had foreign tourists, there was more, probably mostly German who knew about it, but you know, because they travel the most and have
I feel like Germans know all the good spots.
They have money and time off.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're in Croatia. Did you keep moving, or is that you finally go, okay, time to go back to the UK and start a life?
No, basically. So I wanted to go home for Christmas. So I ended up leaving Croatia because I wanted to go home for Christmas. I think I left on probably December 23rd or 24th. I waited until the last minute possible. And I remember getting into the Uber on the way to the airport. So I had done these 4 months, so 3 months in Italy, 1 month in Croatia. And I remember bawling my eyes out. I was I cried so hard because I was like, oh, my adventure is over. I loved it. I had the best time ever. And I think I was more in my young 20s and I loved it. I don't know if I'd want the same experience now. I think now I'd be a little bit lonely. I think I loved solo travel. I loved meeting people, but I stayed really busy, but it was difficult to meet people, especially in Italy, because there weren't any tourists. And so they're all Italians. And Italians don't speak the best English. And I think they also were like, oh, you're here for a week. Like, why would I bother? And it was really difficult to meet people. So I was a little bit lonely. But I mean, it was an incredible experience, especially in Croatia. So I'm so glad I had the experience. And I think I probably could have done it for a year and been really content. But I think if I did the trip now, I would want to go with a friend. I think I wouldn't be as excited about the solo experience. But at the time, it was great.
How about any language? You have any language skills? Any other languages you're working on? Not even Spanish,
no.
Texan.
Okay,
come on.
So I think this is, I feel really embarrassed about this, but I am not good with other languages. But also, I haven't really ever put in very much effort to learn another language, which is terrible of me. And it makes me feel very guilty to say that. But I also, everyone speaks a little bit of English. So it's difficult for me to be motivated.
We can get lazy.
I know, it does make me lazy. So it's difficult to be motivated to learn another language whenever I kind of would struggle with Italian and they were like, oh, English? And then they would just start speaking English. Some people would look at me and automatically start speaking in English.
Of course. So, I mean, that happens most of the time. You know, it's like I would go someplace, they automatically, even if I want to work on my Spanish, you know, they're like, it just saves time. You know,
they're
don't
like,
have
it's
time
easier.
To sit here. Yeah. Let's just get through this order. What do you want to eat?
Yeah. And sometimes they actually want to practice their English as well.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's the opposite, that they really want to practice their English. And so yeah, it's not been something that I've done in the past, but I have set a goal to learn Spanish this year. So I will be taking Spanish lessons. You'll have to hold me to that
because
I haven't signed up yet.
All right.
But I've been looking for tutors online. So I have been actioning because I have been looking for tutors online. But
all right, good. Yeah. But then you get if you learn it out there, every UK person speaks like a Spaniard. You know, Ibiza, and you know, the Z is a F sound and everything else.
I've been looking for a Latin American Spanish speaker. So I think I'll do it online, actually. So I've been looking for Spanish, like people in Mexico, actually.
Try Colombia, too. I heard that's a pretty good neutral America's accent because Mexicans speak in their own way. Because every time I try to, when I would go to Spain and try to speak Spanish, they say, my friends would laugh. They go, you sound like a Mexican. And we're like, that's all the Spanish I've heard my whole life. I'm from America. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to sound like I'm from, you know, Barcelona.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't want to, though, also in the U.S., you know? You're better off having the Mexican accent.
Okay, so now you go back to the U.K. Now you do you pick up with the same company again, or you stick with them?
Yeah.
And when did this podcast start?
Yeah, so I went back to the U.K. in May of 2021. I was in the U.S. for a little while because all my friends said, don't go back to the U.K. We keep having lockdowns. It's terrible here. And at the time, my sister was getting married in Texas. So I got to be a part of helping her find her wedding dress and being a part of the wedding and the bachelorette thing. So I got to be a part of that, which was really special because sometimes whenever you live abroad, you miss out on stuff like that. So the sacrifices we make. And then I moved back to London in May of 2021, and I continued working for that company that I did the second internship with. So I was, they were true to their word. They did get me a skilled worker visa, which at the time I think was, I can't remember if when they switched the name from tier two to skilled worker, but I had the general work visa. I worked for them for a few months, and then they said, hey, so this has been great, but we're actually going to move the whole company over to Italy. And so you're going to have to find another job and another visa by X date. So I worked for them for a little while. It was a startup company. And then I scrambled to find another job. And I ended up applying to a lot of jobs. And I ended up finding the one that I'm currently working for. So it did take a lot of job applications, a lot of interviews, but I did end up securing a job that ended up being honestly, genuinely what like my dream job for me, because I am able to work remotely and they gave me a lot of flexibility and freedom. I'm able to go to the US and work for however long I really want to, and I can work US hours. So it's really great because my family is back in the US. So I kind of have the best of both worlds where I can go back home and work remotely from Texas if I want to, but then I live in the UK. So that's really nice.
Yeah, you just got to wake up really early when you're here, like I am.
Sometimes,
had to set an alarm to talk to you, Jordan. Come on now. You're welcome.
I'm honored.
Yeah.
But no, they let me work U.S. hours. So while I'm in the U.S., I work U.S. hours. Okay. While I'm in the U.K., I work U.K. hours. So it's honestly, I get the best of both worlds, which is really unique.
So, okay, you know, you're back there. You find a place. I hear, let's just talk about finding an apartment. Yeah. In England or in London specifically.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird situation for my friends who live there. You have to hire an estate agent, or you got to go through, you got to pay commissions to people. It's kind of a nightmare from what I'm hearing. And, you got to look through a lot of crap to get to something decent. And, it's expensive. So compared to find the process here, is it, what kind of deposit do you have to bet? You know, like other countries, you need like a local bank. I don't know what the story is. So for people thinking about it, what's the process?
Yeah. So as you say, it is quite competitive in London. I think London is just competitive in general. It's competitive to find a job, like a good job. It's competitive to find housing because
it's a big city.
One of the best it's a big city, and it's, I mean, I'm a little bit biased, but it's one of the best places in the world, like one of the top cities in the world that a lot of people want to move to.
Yeah.
So finding housing is challenging. I actually, like I had said earlier on, I lived in Shepherd's Bush in London for 5 years, and then I recently moved to Putney. So I recently went through this process, and basically in the UK, people have to give 2 months notice before they move out if it's a rental. So typically you can't say, I'm going to move to London in 6 months. I'm going to start looking for housing now. Nothing's going to be available for 6 months in the future. You have to look 2 months before. I also recommend for people to make sure they view it in person because, like you said, there's a lot of kind of sketchy places that are a little bit crappy, and you have to go through those to find some of the good ones because the photos can look amazing online. But then whenever you go see it in person, you're like, this has a really weird smell. This neighborhood is actually really sketchy. I feel uncomfortable here or whatever. So it is important to see it in person. And I have had a horror story of a friend of mine that did not do that, where she was like, she was an American from the US, and she was, and I told her that I was like, I don't know if I would go for it. I think I would maybe wait until you're there in person. But I understand why people don't want to do that because it's a little bit unsettling to move somewhere, go into an Airbnb or something and temporary housing and then move. It's like, you kind of want to just settle in, which I do understand, but there's a bit of a risk of that. So anyway, she moved into the place and then they ended up breaking their lease because she said it was just so awful. It was just a nightmare. So you do have to be careful. But I essentially, you have to be so quick because it is so competitive. You have to jump on things really quickly. So I had 3 apps on my phone where they were sending me notifications. I think it's Rightmove, Zoopla, and On the Market. Those are the 3 apps that I had. And I also picked neighborhoods that I wanted to live in. So I did in-person scouting trips where I would walk around the neighborhood because I've been to Chelsea a million times. And in my head, I was like, Chelsea, that'd be a great place to live. But then whenever I went there with the lens of, could I actually move here? Could I live here? What is the transport like? What are the gyms around the area like? Are there coffee shops I would like? What are the people like? Does it feel safe? What does the rent look like? It changed my perspective on where I actually wanted to be. So I think it's important to do these kind of like trips to kind of experience what the neighborhood is like.
Yeah.
And so I would pick
Sometimes
the neighborhoods.
Sometimes you just have a vibe, right? I mean, it's
a
vibe.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've talked about Chiswick before. Chiswick is my favorite neighborhood. So what I actually did was I went to the, there's agencies on the high streets as well. And so I would call the leasing agents and I'd say, this is what I'm looking for. And I gave them my specifics on the, what I was looking for the flat. And so they were on the lookout for me and they could let me know if there was a property that was coming on the market before it was actually listed. So I would recommend doing that for people if they're looking for housing. So I was looking on the apps I was looking every day on the apps. And if I saw one that I liked, I would call the agent immediately to say, I want to set up a viewing because you have to be on it with places. Otherwise they get snatched. Some places only do viewings one day and then they're gone after that. And then I also had these agents from these local, like in the neighborhood that I wanted to move to. So in Chiswick, I think I was on the list for like three or four of them. Oh. And they would like send me an email saying, this one's available. Are you interested? So I kind of was going at it from different angles. Those are the two, I think, best places for me that I found.
Do they run a equivalent of like a credit check on you like they do here? Or, I mean, do they... Is the credit score a thing, or do they want to see your job receipts? They want to know that you're working. I mean, what are the requirements?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember what they made me submit. I don't think they did a credit check, but they did do referencing for my previous landlord. So she had to fill out a form saying that I had indeed been paying rent and paying it on time. I think that's what they care about the most. And then I had to show that I had been employed, so I had to show my pay slips. So I think they want to make sure I had a current job. I had to show my visa as well. And they're quite strict about that in the UK, that they have to show that you are
you're legal.
You're allowed to be living there, correct. And then, a reference for my landlord.
Okay. Yeah. Have you mastered the tube system yet? How many mistakes did you make when you first moved there?
Oh, my goodness, a million. And, you know, my sense of direction is... Yeah, my sense of direction is terrible. I moved to Putney recently, so I'm on a different tube line than I used to be. And I have gone the wrong way so many times. Like, it took me a while to get it because there's different branches. I still on the Northern line, which is the black line in the UK and London for people who are familiar, I still get confused. It's like this helix, like it's still to this day confuses me. So I heavily rely on Google Maps. Some people swear by City Mapper. Some people like that one, but my sense of direction is so bad, I always use the maps. Have to.
Yeah. So now that the biggest regret, the biggest mistake people make when moving abroad? I mean, I don't know how many people you've talked to and helped through this, but we'll just use Americans because that's what we're most familiar with. Is it fear? Is it not doing your homework before you get here? Or... I have talked to people with, businesses who help people move abroad and stuff like that. And they say they really recommend going first and staying for an extended period of time before you decide to make the big move. And they think just like, I'm going to move to Italy and all my problems are solved. And it doesn't work. Yeah. The problems are still there. You're just having them in a different place.
There's a lot to touch on here. So I had said that I went to London for 4 days. I fell in love with it. And I said, I'm going to move here someday. I was in London legitimately for 4 days and I knew I was going to move here. I knew I was going to move to London. I think that doesn't happen for everyone, but for me, I only needed 4 days and it worked out for me, but I could have moved here and it could have been something where I moved here for a year. And I said, oh, this is such a big city. This really isn't for me. But through that experience, I probably would have said, oh, I visited Portugal while I was in London. Actually, Lisbon, I think, might be a better fit for me. So I think that one of the biggest mistakes that I think people make is, and this sounds silly to say almost, but I think the biggest mistake is that people say they want to move abroad, that it is a dream that they have, but they're too scared to do it or they don't know the process. And so they just kind of stay where they're at and they don't actually action anything. So I think they don't really try, or they say like, oh, I'm trying to move there, but maybe they've applied for one job, maybe two, because I think I think it's person to person, but I think sometimes people are afraid of actually needing to make that decision of, am I actually going to take the job or not? Am I actually going to do it or not? So this is a really big change, and it is a big change. So I think that's the biggest mistake, is people saying they really want to do it and then not actually actioning it. And like you said, your friends were suggesting to do an extended trip. I think, kind of going back to that example of neighborhoods in London, where I said I did a scouting, I thought moving to Chelsea would be great. And then I did a scouting trip in Chelsea where I said, could I actually live here? What would this feel like to actually move here and live here? And then I was like, what, now that I'm here, actually, I don't think this is a good fit for me. I actually think that Chiswick or Putney might be a better fit for me. So I do think that being there with the lens of could I live here is different from just having a vacation there. So I think it is important, even if you've said I've been to Lisbon before, I think it's important to be there with boots on the ground and say, could I live here? But I don't think you have to do it for an extended period of time before you move there. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah,
but the longer you're able to do it, yeah, the better. The longer you do it, the better. But a lot of people, if they're employed or depending on your situation or responsibilities, you can only go for a week, 2 weeks.
Yeah,
max.
They don't have that time.
You know, you don't have the time. But if you do, then great. Like, go for 3 months and give it a go and find your neighborhood.
Right.
And like, if you can do it, great. But I don't think that that's necessary.
Like, I moved from Chicago to New York to LA, and you know, the first, you never stay. It's very rare you stay in the first place you live.
Yeah.
You know, you move to a big city. I mean, there's, you got to learn it.
Exactly.
And you're going, you know what, this is my first place.
Yeah.
But then figure out the city a little more, and then you got to know what you like, what you want. And I'm sure that's true of any town. But would you leave the UK now that you're such an expert and moving? How would you leave Europe? Would you say, you know what, I'm going to try Tokyo for a little while or something like that?
I feel like once you move once, even in the US, so you say that you've moved to multiple places, I feel like once you do it once, you kind of know the process and you know what to expect, and it makes it easier to have the guts to do it again.
Sure.
So I feel like once you do it once, it makes it a lot easier. I genuinely love London so much. I won't move, more than likely, and depending on how the rules change with visas and stuff, but I don't plan on moving until I get dual citizenship, which is in a couple years for me. But even at that point, I don't plan to move from London. I think I would always love to have a base in London, but it does open up your mind to life in other places as well. So I've been to Lisbon before, and I remember being there and thinking, I could live here someday. And I went to Cape Town, South Africa for the first time 2 years ago, and I fell in love with it. And I was like, I could actually live here. So
yeah.
I think you never know how life changes, and I'm open to opportunities. I think right now, like I said, I'm kind of wanting to stay put for the next 2 years. But once I have dual citizenship, maybe I would be open to going somewhere else for a year or two. Or maybe if I can continue working remotely, I live in London for half the year, and then I live in Cape Town for half the year. For me, that's the dream. So
yeah,
and let's see if I can make that work it out. We'll see.
One of our most recent guests was Kelly. She was the same thing, American. She moved to Cape Town. Now she lives there now.
It's incredible.
And now she met a guy there, and now she splits her time to and there.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, what's the dating scene in London compared to Texas? Give us that.
Different. I mean, in Texas, you're going to find that people are pretty similar to yourself. They grew up really similarly. They have kind of a similar thought process. In London, there's just a huge variety. And I think that will be the same whether you move to Lisbon, you move to Madrid, you move to Rome. I mean, you're going to find more Italians if you're in Rome. So you're going to have that more often. It's going to be more difficult. There's not as big of a dating pool, I suppose. So there will always be, or you would hope that you move somewhere with a lot of expats. So I always tell people it's good to move places where there's a good, strong expat community, where there are people who have also moved abroad, Americans or people from New Zealand, Canada, whatever, because you kind of have, it's a similar type of person, I feel like, that moves abroad. So you get on with each other quite well, but to have a mix of expat friends and local friends. But I do feel like typically expats end up dating other expats. And I just didn't ever really get along with British men very well. So I actually 90% of the men that I dated in London were actually South African. They had quite a similar culture to Texas. They remind me of home. And I fell in love with
Cape
Town. I was like, you know what? If I meet a South African and I want to spend 6 months a year in London and 6 months a year in Cape Town, then great. We'll visit their family. And so, yeah. But actually, the last time I was in Cape Town, actually, I met someone.
Here we go.
Yeah. So
they're taller, right? He's tall. Like, they're all tall down there. They're big, big people.
So I met him in Cape Town, but he's actually half German, half Mexican.
What the?
So that's actually why I'm going to learn Spanish, is because he's half Mexican and he speaks a lot of Spanish with all of his friends and family. So I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to learn it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Half German, half Mexican. Wow.
Yeah. There's a mix. Interesting mix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whenever I ask people who are living abroad, Americans living abroad, what do you miss the most? Mm-hmm. The first, one of the two top answers always, Mexican food. Is it the same for you?
Tex-Mex. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you would be you would be Tex-Mex.
I for sure miss Tex-Mex. I miss barbecue. I think the I mean the most obvious answer is my friends and family being around.
Well, sure,
them.
Yeah.
And I think that my friends and family back home in a way will always understand me the most, or get me the most. But I think the longer that you do live abroad, the more I'll always kind of straddle. You kind of change a little bit. You change a little bit whenever you move abroad. So I feel like I'm not describing this super well, but I feel like my friends and family back home, in short, understand me the most. And so it feels good to be around people who get you. And I think sometimes whenever you live abroad, it's harder.
Traveling around the world. Yeah. I mean, but you are not only American, which brings its own set of baggage that people want to talk about.
Yeah.
You're also from Texas, which people know worldwide. Texas.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was the UK or another country. It was just like somebody, Texas was like a verb. They would say, oh, this guy went Texas, which means he went crazy. And I was like, really? That's like the nick. That's like the term for crazy. It's like he went all Texas on him. I was
that's
like, what?
So funny. Yeah. You know what? Whenever people ask me where I'm from, I don't say I'm from the US. I say I'm from Texas.
Yeah. And everybody
because
knows what
know
you mean.
Where it is. And they're like, ah, Texas.
Yeah.
But if I say I'm from the US, they're like, okay, great. But if I say Texas, they're like, like they get excited. So I'm like,
it
yeah,
has
I'm
an
from
image.
Texas.
It does have an image.
Yeah.
Some good, some bad, but it does have it does have an image. But the best thing about being in London, well, one of the best things is that you're about 11 hours from anywhere in the world. And especially living in LA, we're so far from everything.
Yeah.
It's really just travel for people like us who like to travel. Other than the Pacific Rim and Hawaii, there's no big advantage. You are like you said, going to Cape Town. It's about what, an 11-hour flight, maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, 11, 12, something like that. Yeah.
It's twice as long to go from here. So,
100%.
Just the time zone alone change is crazy. So use that advantage that I would say. Use Heathrow to its full extent is what I'm saying.
100%. Yeah.
Where do you want to go next? Where do you want to go next?
Well, next, the potential trip is to a kite surfing trip from a boat in Greece. So we would be on a boat in Greece for a week and kind of island hop and do kite surfing, which I've never done. So I fully anticipate face planting into the water and being waterboarded. For a lot of it. But yeah, that's
not waterboarded. Let's be clear.
Yeah. But I expect that will be a challenge for the first couple of days. But that's what's next on the agenda. So,
to be
determined. So it's not all locked in yet.
All right, get your plugs in. Where can people find the show? The name of the podcast and the website, and where can people tell us your socials and everything else?
Yeah, sure. So my website, if you want to find me online, is jordangiberson.com. So I would assume my name will be in the podcast description so people can see how it's spelled. And we can maybe share the link as well.
We'll have links.
So that's the website. So if you want to find out more about me and what I do, then that would be a great place to find me. And then the podcast is also a great place to hear more about moving abroad and what the process looks like and things like that. So the podcast is called Move Abroad. So quite easy to find. It's just if you type in Move Abroad on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, it'll pop up. And then my Instagram is at jordan.giberson. So yeah. And my Instagram, honestly, I need to increase my Instagram game because it is a little bit dead. But
yeah,
I know
whatever.
I'm like, I'm not an Instagram girly, but I am very active on Pinterest. And the podcast comes on every Monday. There's a new podcast episode. And there's also a blog on my website every Monday as well.
Okay. And finally, what do you think all this travel and your experiences and leaving the country you're born in and all these experiences, what do you think has it taught you about people, about the world, about yourself?
Yeah.
How has it changed you?
Oh, man. I mean, I think you don't just with anything in life, you don't know what you don't know. And I think whenever I moved to London, I think it's really, really interesting whenever you move abroad to see the US from the outside looking in. I think it does really change your perspective on politics, on our culture, on just how we interact with the rest of the world, on how we are seen as a leader still to this day, even though things have changed a little bit politically and people, you know, I don't want to get too into politics, but.
Oh, we know what you mean.
Yeah, but I think in some ways you realize how bad it really is and how polarized our politics is and how ugly it is and how bad that is and how other countries aren't like that and how it really rips apart relationships and how hard it is on people and how ugly it is, I think. But I think in some ways how lucky we are as well. I mean, there's so many opportunities that we do have in the US, and I think there are many amazing places across the world, but I think Americans really are lucky. There are so many opportunities that we do have as Americans that many other countries don't have. And they question why. They're like, why would you ever leave the US? So I think so many people want to be there. And as you see in the news, I mean, it's harder and harder for people to move there. And people want to be there so badly because there are so many opportunities in the US that a lot of people don't have. Like in Italy, just as one quick example, people have a really hard time finding jobs in Italy. They have a hard time progressing in their careers. They have a really difficult time finding anything. And so they're just trying to find any opportunity. And they end up in the same job for 20 years because no one ever leaves jobs and they don't. So I think you just don't – that's just one tiny example. So I think there are so many ways that we are really lucky, so many ways that we are very big-headed as Americans and thinking that we're just the best in the world. And politics is quite ugly. So I think – there's just, it gives you a very different perspective whenever you do move abroad and you're looking at it from the outside looking in. I think that's kind of the biggest thing for me that's just been really interesting.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes you have to, that's the best way to look at yourself is by stepping out of it and looking back and go, oh, I like this. Yeah. I don't like that part. I like this part. I don't like that part.
And, exactly. And you take on what you want to take on and you,
yeah,
exactly. And you release the things that you say, I don't like that part of our culture. I'm not going to practice that anymore. And you release that and you take on the culture of the new country that you're in. Like maybe you don't want to work crazy hours and feel pressured to not take your holidays in the US, your vacation days, depending on the industry, of course. But, and then there might be other things you say, actually the US, they do it really well. So I think it just kind of, yeah, I think it,
open
it
a Tex-Mex place. Get the, yeah. Now you got to find one Tex-Mex place in London,
and
there probably is. There's everything
a Tex-Mex
in London.
Place in
you're kidding. Chizik.
Our favorite neighborhood. There's a Tex-Mex place called Di Grande, and the owner of the restaurant saw my Aggie ring that I still wear to this day because it reminds me of home.
Oh boy,
it reminds me of home. It reminds me of Texas, and he saw it and he was like, "Are you from Texas?" And he started this Tex-Mex restaurant in Chizik. And he said, the second that I perfected my queso recipe is whenever I opened the Tex-Mex restaurant. So yeah, Di Grande, everyone, if you're interested in Tex-Mex in London.
Okay. And it matched up.
Yeah, it's really good, actually.
All right.
Great margaritas. And the place is always packed. So that's a sign of a good restaurant as well.
Yeah. My girlfriend's from Tulsa. So she's, always looking for Tex-Mex somewhere. It's like, how's the queso fundido? How's the queso fundido? I'm like, yeah. I don't know. We didn't have that where, I had other Mexican, I had real Mexican food in Chicago and in LA. But no, we find it. It's great. But thank you for doing this. I know you got to run.
Of course.
Stay in line for a second and I'll talk to you afterward. But we'll look for it. You got a new fan of the podcast.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
And when
you so
I go
much.
Out there next time, we'll meet and we'll go get Tex-Mex.
Absolutely. I love that.
All right.
Yeah. Thank
Jordan
you so much.
Jordan Giberson, everybody.
Thank you.
For spontaneous travelers, winging it is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75 plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.